Broadcasting from deep within the second realm, you are listening to agoristradio.com.
Hello, this is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. Agoristradio.com is sponsored by MetroPie.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible.
Hello, welcome back to Cypherpunk. Today we have a special guest who's returning from a previous show, Nefario. He's with the Global Bitcoin Stock Exchange by Bitcoin Global and a couple other projects he's got going on. We've had him on before and going into an intro and a fairly in-depth view of the Stock Exchange project. And he's back today with an update and some information on these other projects, and we'll probably talk a little bit about all this Bitcoin mania that's just continuing to explode around the globe. Welcome back to the show, Nefario.
Thanks for having me on, Hero.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Well, you want to tell us a little update on what's going on with the GLBSE?
Quite a bit has happened since I was on last time. We've moved on quite a bit with development. So we've now got a nice web-based user interface instead of the command line one, much easier to use. Mm. And it's all written in JavaScript and run from the client. So the server still doesn't have any usernames or passwords. So it's still just as secure as the normal command line client.
Oh, great!
So that would be our biggest ease of use update in terms of actual the stock market itself. We have something like 4 legitimate shares that are on there that are trading, and let me see. There have been 3 IPOs on the exchange where users have managed to get the capital they need to start their project. One project is for to let people do face-to-face Bitcoin exchanges.
Oh, great.
So that project's called Ubitex, and he got like all his capital he needed for that in a day. Another project is by a guy called Dishwara, and the share is the same name, and he's using the capital to start mining Bitcoins, really, and he's paying out dividends to shareholders. He was our first person to pay out dividends to the shareholders on the exchange.
Wow.
And then, so that's already, that functionality is already being used. There is SYN, which is another Bitcoin mining interest. And then there is the CMS400, which is someone who's kind of selling mining contracts. And micro mining contracts. So they've bought like a Bitcoin mining contract off someone else, and they're kind of chopping it into pieces and selling the pieces on the exchange. And they've paid out dividends as well.
Wow.
There's also 2 test shares on there that I've been using to test, and there's 2 shares that have gone up by accident, and then there are two shares that went up as I think an attempt to scam people.
Interesting.
So that's, and there's been a lot of market activity going on, buying, selling, whatnot.
So okay.
I think so far, yeah. So that's kind of the global Bitcoin GLBSC update.
Okay.
What I'm working on right now with GLBSC is
just a okay. moment. Are you moving on to something besides the stock exchange, or are you still talking about that?
I'm still talking about the stock exchange.
Okay. Before you go on, I have several little questions here. So,
okay.
Well, go ahead.
So, what are your questions?
Do you have anything else that when I interrupted you that you were going to talk?
No. Go with the question. Go with okay. questions, and then I can.
Let's back up to the beginning. The client. Before, when I originally tested it, like you mentioned, it was a command line interface, and that was to the client. And you said that you have the GUI now running in the browser. So you have that running, like you're running a client locally, and then the browser is doing like JSON RPC commands to it, or what?
So when you visit the page, the web page. Mm-hmm. It's just like a normal HTML page that downloads like a regular one, and it has JavaScript in there. But once all the JavaScript is downloaded, it sends information back to the server in the same way that the command line client does. So it uses in the client, the web-based client, you put in your private RSA key, and then it will sign any transaction and send that onto the server. The private key is never at any time sent to the server. So it works in the exact same way as the command line client, except it's running in your browser as JavaScript.
Okay, and where does the JavaScript load from?
That's downloaded directly from the server in the same way just the normal web page is.
Okay, so you could save that information locally and just load it up locally?
I'm not sure, because it uses AJAX, so you might, if you tried to do it that way, it probably wouldn't be allowed because of cross-domain requests. As far as I know, are not allowed using AJAX. That's
okay.
a JavaScript security thing. We had, like, when we were trying to get development started on that, that was a bit of an issue that we had to get around.
Yeah, well, I mean, this thing could be repackaged into like a Firefox extension or something, and then it would have.
It could be repackaged as a Firefox plugin.
Yeah, and it could do anything with that. Okay, so this thing, it basically loads everything up, and the client itself takes care of all the crypto in your browser.
We do the crypto is done in JavaScript, so it is a little bit slow, but it's much more pleasant than using. It's much more pleasant than using the command line interface.
Well, yeah.
So I'm just going to send.
Pretty
I'm just going to send you the link there.
Okay.
And you can go and have a look at that.
Oh, great. Yeah, let's check that out. Can I post this link in the show notes? Okay.
I'll give you another link for a kind of tutorial warning on the web-based client as well.
Okay. Now, where is your keys located for your account information in this? I think you may have said it, but...
That is in the tutorial. I'll send you the link to.
I mean, what is it on your hard drive, and you paste it into a form before you start trading or something?
You paste it into a form, and then it's cached in your web browser, and then every time you send a request to the server, that gets signed using your private key.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fantastic, man. That's pretty fascinating. That's really great. Now, you mentioned these other stocks that are on there. It's not necessarily related directly to this, but I would kind of like to go over these just because it'll help people understand what they're doing on the GLBSE. Because a lot of people think, well, it's a stock exchange, and they just think of MT Gox and some of the other trading systems out there where you throw it on there and you're just trading for U.S. dollars and some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But this is...
So I just sent you the list. Yeah, I just sent you the list of... that is on the exchange there of what's being traded.
Oh, let me load that up here. Now, the OTC, just real quick, this guy's got, he's doing an in-person exchange business or something. He had an idea for it, and he got funding for it, and it's up.
Yeah, so with UbiText and the share symbol, the ticker symbol is UBX, and his idea is that it's kind of a location-based service, so you can put in your location, and it will find the nearest person to you who's doing face-to-face Bitcoin for cash exchanges.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think I saw his website for this.
So he's been making a lot of progress on this, and people are very happy with it.
Yeah. What is his business model, though? I mean, I saw the website up there. I mean, how is he distributing? This is an actual project where he's talking about throwing profit back.
I don't know what his business model is. That's up to the people who are buying, for them to work that out themselves and make sure that a certain project is going to be profitable. Although people who bought the shares, they may not necessarily care if it's profitable or not. They might just want this particular project to go ahead.
Yeah, right. Oh, I know, but you could just like send him money in Bitcoin, and I'm just wondering why they're doing this on the GLBSE rather than, you know, just donating money to it. I guess we'll have to ask him. On the mining shares, so these people are basically, this is on the second project you mentioned. How I would understand this is that there's some guys out there with a bunch of mining rigs, and they're cranking out stuff either on their own or they're part of a pool, it doesn't matter, but they're taking people's money as investment to buy more GPUs or something like that. And then they're returning the money back. So if you don't have enough money to get, you don't want to mine, you can throw your money into one of these things, and these guys will return profit back to you based on the investment and the hardware and the operation cost. Is that it?
That is it. That is it exactly.
Okay, perfect, fantastic. It's wild. You know what's so funny about that is that this is like, you know, if this company was the first one to do this, they can literally say that they were the first. Bitcoin mining, mining shares, like in the real world,
yeah.
You know.
the first mining company was one called Dishwara, and he's a guy based in India, and he had tried to kind of get loans from other forum members, and he'd been on the forum for quite a while, and he wasn't able to get any funds to get started, so he came to me and asked me to, can he list on the exchange, and showed him how to use the client and everything. And he did, and he got all the funds he needed to get started. And he was the first person to pay out a dividend to shareholders. It wasn't a huge dividend, but I mean, it was kind of a landmark thing, being the first dividend payout. Since then, there's been a few more payouts.
Yeah, and he's paying this out of his mining.
Yeah, so because the shares were bought in Bitcoin, and he's paying the profit is going back to the shareholders in Bitcoin, because his mining rigs, they generate Bitcoin, and every couple of days he'll make a payment to the shareholders.
Incredible. Yeah, I mean, so he doesn't even have to like in the real world, in the physical world, a mining company is going to do their stuff. They get their gold out. They don't send gold back to the shareholders. They, you know, get it processed and whatever they do, and then whatever money's left over after their bills and stuff, and then they distribute that in to their clients, either, I don't know, some maybe additional shares or the cash value that was actually sold. This is amazing that these guys are distributing Bitcoin back to it. That's really fascinating. One question on this next one. You said there's this one selling mining contracts. Now, what is that?
The way that works is that there are people out there who sell like big mining contracts. So they have a lot of computing power and a lot of graphics cards, and they can mine, you know, Bitcoins for that. And what they do is they'll sell a certain amount of computing power for a period of 1 month, 2 months, or 3 months. And what this person has done is they've bought like this large contract for, I don't know, a month worth of mining on so many machines.
Uh-huh.
And they've basically chopped this up into 1,000 pieces and sold it piece by piece. And so whatever profit this person gets from that mining contract will be chopped up into the number of shares that were sold, and then each share will get the total value of, you know, whatever Bitcoin was generated with that portion of the contract.
Okay. Now, the way that I would see the difference between that and the other one is that on this contract one, the guy doesn't actually have a bunch of rigs that he's looking at getting an investment from. He's literally renting time on some of these guys that have rigs out there.
Exactly. So yeah. he has his own money, and he's bought time in a large block chunk, and he's chopping it up into smaller chunks and reselling it.
Yeah.
So he's basically using the stock exchange to resell something.
Yeah. No, fantastic. I saw, I forget the name of the company, some guy, he's selling these, his website is basically dedicated to mining rigs for Bitcoin mining. And he has several models available of machines, and he shows how many, the hash
Hello?
Power. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear?
Yeah.
Okay. It shows that the hash power per machine. But he also rents the rigs, and you pay a certain amount of money, and you get it for like 3 months or something like that, and it's pretty much a guaranteed number.
That's Vladimir. He's based in the UK.
Oh, okay.
As far as I know. He's been doing this for quite a few months, and he's able to work. He's able to get enough income from this for this to be his full-time job, really. So he's living off this now. He's living off Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's something else. Man, look, the stuff that's happening in this, I mean, you talk about a free market here. All these systems and multi-dimensional business type operations, like people just doing stuff. I mean, not just the stuff we're talking about, but it seems like there's like, you know, 5 or 10 new companies a day that are doing interesting stuff, not just like someone selling socks, but just interesting stuff with all of this. Any other thing? Oh, the back end. Has there been any changes on the engine in the back that's going besides just
no? No, I've decided before we start to try and switch over to open transactions, we need to kind of get a lot of the functionality done, and we need to be at a kind of stable before we start, because we have limited resources, and if we kind of stopped adding functionality and the kind of neat things that are really needed at this point, a lot of time would go by before we kind of get over and get working with open transactions. So we have to wait until we don't need to kind of introduce a lot of new functionality and until I'm able to bring more developers on board as well. So I'm very limited in terms of time that I can spend, so I need to spend it on the most important thing.
That sounds prudent and wise. The fact that these guys are on here already using the system and doing these business models, and they're working, and people who have invested with their shares are getting return on their investment, and it's operational. This is great, you know. Keep moving forward like this little by little then, you know, make your changes later on. At least this is live and it's working. So, you know, pretty fantastic. Well, you want to move on to these other projects here? Go ahead.
I'll just cover one more thing. Right now we're working on, I'm working on smart contracts. And what this will allow us to do, the implementation of the smart contracts, and what this will allow us to do is to start having kind of outside assets being listed on the exchange. So think in terms of MT Gox dollars being sold on the Global Bitcoin Exchange. Think any kind of asset in Loom. I got a Loom account a short time ago because I plan to start integrating Loom. So any kind of asset in Loom being sold on the Bitcoin Exchange.
Awesome.
And one of my plans is to with the smart contracts, then we could start adding options. So you can have like Bitcoin options for empty aux dollars or another kind of dollar. And another handy thing, we'll be able to have cross exchange trades. So this can allow for currency arbitration. So let's say you have empty aux dollars and you want to change it into British pounds that are being sold on another Bitcoin exchange called Britcoin.
Uh-huh.
Now, normally, let's say the price in Britcoin dropped and you thought you could take advantage by selling empty aux dollars and then buying Britcoin.
Right, right.
You need to sell the dollars, then transfer the Bitcoin and then buy them. And because of the way Bitcoin works, it could take anywhere between 10 to 20 minutes for your Bitcoin to get across from one system to the other. So what we're going to be able to do is we will be able to have it so that, you know, if you have empty aux dollars, you can sell them immediately on the Global Bitcoin Exchange, and your Bitcoin will be on the Global Bitcoin Exchange, and then you can buy Bitcoin British pounds almost instantly. So you can take advantage of any price differences. So it's going to turn into a kind of the glue between a lot of the exchanges and other systems.
Oh man, this is just fantastic.
This also leads into the next project that I'm working on.
Well, let's go. Hit us up. What do you got going on?
So one of the things we feel that, you know, when we talk about the new Bitcoin being in the news, we feel like us in Bitcoin Global feel that fairly soon a lot of the Bitcoin exchanges, particularly empty aux, is likely to get shut down by the government. Mm-hmm. And this is a tremendous danger for us in terms that it'll seriously hamper the value of the Bitcoins we have and prevent us from being able to use the Bitcoins we have to use them to get stuff done. You know, right now we've got like something like $40,000 worth of Bitcoin. And if we couldn't exchange that for a dollar or another currency easily, that would seriously prevent us from going ahead with our operations. We wouldn't be able to pay anybody to do anything. So we need to be able to protect ourselves, protect our position. And of course, since our profits are all meant to be in Bitcoin, we need to be able to protect our profits. Mm-hmm. So we're developing a system called Nomicoin. We've got a domain for that. So N-O-M-I. Nomico.in.
Okay.
Kind of like an anonymous Bitcoin. And this is the implementation of my anonymous Bitcoin exchange that I've written about before.
Oh, wow. Super. Can you tell us
how it works?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people haven't read the article, so tell us how this
works. So in a nutshell, the idea with the anonymous Bitcoin exchange is we have a kind of central vault, which is in a secret location, held by someone who's trustworthy. And this location is only known by a handful of people. It's not known by any authorities, and it's not known by, certainly not by any gangsters. And the idea is that its location remains secret, and that will protect everything that's in it from government seizure or from the seizure from anyone else. And the way we're going to get currency in and out of the vault is by using bank accounts as a cutout. So instead of having, as most exchanges operate, they have a bank account and people transfer money to the bank account, and then, you know, a lot of the trading happens inside the system, and then the money is transferred out of the bank account when you want to redeem.
Mm-hmm.
So all in and out transactions are known, and people who are transferring money in and transferring money out, their bank accounts are known, and the account of the exchange can be shut down at any time.
Right.
And that means all the assets in the account can be frozen. So this is the danger we're worried about. And what we're going to do to avoid that is get rid of the bank account as the central store and just use it as a cutout. So we want the goods, the currency that we have to be safe from seizure.
Uh-huh.
So that means that the exchange itself or the vault has to remain secret. And the way we do that is we're going to use the customer's own bank account as the cutout. So what they can do is they will open a bank account and send the bank card to the exchanger, to the vault.
Okay.
They can do this using BitDrop or some other delivery service, or, you know, friend to a friend to a friend, whatever, it doesn't matter. And when they want to deposit money to their account, deposit cash, they can use e-banking from their normal bank account to transfer it to this account that they've given the card to the
exchanger.
To the vault.
Oh, right, uh-huh.
To the exchanger. And then the exchanger can just use the bank card and take that money out and then mark on the system that this person now has X amount of dollars in their account that they can now then sell on the exchange. So this allows for a complete kind of currency, in-country currency transfer system.
Okay. Now, a lot of these systems work both ways. Is that correct?
Sorry?
Do many of these systems work both ways, the cards? Can the exchanger put money into the card from...
Yeah. It's a two-way system. You're using the bank account as a drop, so the exchanger can then go use like one of these automatic deposit machines. You know, you've got the ATM for taking out cash, and there's an automatic deposit machine for putting in cash.
Mm-hmm.
So the exchanger can then, when the person wants to withdraw, they can then go, the exchanger takes the cash that the person wants to withdraw, goes to one of these automatic deposit machines, deposits the amount into the person's account, and the person just then withdraws from the dropout account, or the exchanger can then use e-banking to send it to the person's account. So the person's account can become known, but it only looks like they're depositing and withdrawing from their own account, and nobody knows who the exchanger is. That person remains anonymous.
Do you know worldwide how that works? Does the exchanger need? I know if he's pulling money out.
It has to be in country to prevent any red flags being brought up.
Okay. So in country, and then I know he can withdraw from any ATM. Period. But deposits, do they need to be made at the network of the branch of the bank of the same bank?
Not necessarily.
No. Okay.
As far as I know, you can use any kind of cash deposit system. It's quite flexible. And the idea is that the vault, there will be one central vault for each country. And then there will be kind of a network of agents that do business with the vault. And then the customers will do business with the agents. The vault is going to be in a large city like New York or London, where there is a huge number of cash machines and deposit machines to choose from.
Yeah.
To make it difficult to nail down who this person is.
Yeah, well, this is amazing that you're you got this underway. You know, one thing some people would object at first, saying, "Well, I don't want to give my ATM card to someone else and all this," but you know, it's pretty similar to the Loom system, where you create a common drop point that you both use, and anytime anything is in there, you both have access to it. Patrick describes it as the counter. It's not your wallet. It's not
his wallet. It's exactly like that.
Right. Yeah. So it's the counter. So, you know, never put anything in there that, you know, you don't just throw money down on the counter unless you expect the guy to pick it up. When he puts down something there, you know that you have it. So, you know, it's not something where you just give somebody your ATM card for your personal savings account and stuff like that.
Yeah. Ideally, you would want to set up your own account for this.
Yeah.
And keep it separately for this. And it's really great because it allows us to use the existing network of banks and cash machines that are already out there for this purpose. So you can then use the system to transfer money from one person in the country to another person, totally anonymously. in country. The way it's going to actually work is that when you deposit money into the system, you'll probably need a global Bitcoin stock exchange account. And when you deposit money into the system, the vault will then take a note that you've deposited money. When they get the cash, they will then issue to your GLBSE account 100 or whatever the amount of the particular asset, which might be kind of, if it's in the UK, then it'll be vault British pounds.
Yeah, right.
If it's in the US, then it's vault U.S. dollars.
Yeah, you guys.
And then you can then you can then trade these dollars on the exchange for whatever you like.
Yeah.
And then it's only when you want to redeem it that you actually have to have a bank account in the country. So you can buy and sell as much as you like, but it's only when redeeming that you actually need to be in the same country as the currency that's been issued.
Yeah, you could redeem to anywhere, but if you're going to pick it up, you got to be in that country. Yeah, it's going to be popping out of an account.
So you'd have to have a kind of an account set up with one of the agents or the vault in that particular country to be able to redeem. But it doesn't mean you can't buy and sell in that particular asset. You can buy and sell it as much as you like.
Yeah.
It's only when you want to redeem it.
Right. Uh-huh. So when someone dumps this money in there, what's nice is you guys, you're not doing an exchange. You're not like taking somebody's you're not taking their euro and giving them Bitcoin, because you could take a hit there, or between the exchange rate and whatever. You're just saying you dump in euro and then you get euro on, and then you do whatever you want. You want to buy Bitcoin with it? Okay, fine. You want to buy some of these other stocks or something, and you play with it from there, but you just dump it in that way. And then when you pull it out, you're going to have to, you'll only support pulling out in a currency of an account that they have set up. So.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you're in Japan, you better have, you're going to have to, move. If you have Bitcoin or Euro inside of the, GLBSE and you're in Japan and you want to pop it out there, you're going to need to trade it on the market into yen and then do your withdrawal.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Super. Wow. This is, how far along is this? I mean, you got the website this is all.
So, well, in terms of the project, we've just got the domain. To allow all this kind of trading to happen on the GOBSE, we need smart contracts, and I'm building that. Should have something by the end of next week. That will allow us to kind of to use the GLBSE to allow that trading going on. And then I need to build a system for the agents and the vault to use to kind of keep track of who has cash and where is that cash and so on.
Okay.
We're probably about, I'd say about 2 months away from being able to start operation.
Okay. Are you going to take this, public on the stock exchange, this operation?
Yeah, yes. We will need capital for this, because the vault is going to be a physical location. It has to be someone trustworthy. And of course, this trustworthy person needs to be repaid for doing this work. And they also need to be able to have some kind of protection, not from police, because you can't really protect yourself from police, but from criminals. So we'd like to try and arm them if possible, and we want them to have a safe. So you could think of this as us setting up some TAS, some temporary economic zones.
Yeah. No, this is mind blowing, man. This is awesome. You know, when you put this up there, I don't think you're going to be lacking for investment in this project.
Well, so far, anytime I've done anything with regards like the GOBSE, I've never really had any difficulty getting funding. Well, most of the projects I go towards, they're ones that people are interested in and people see a need for. So
yeah, they're killer.
And I'd only be doing it if I had a need for it myself. That's the only reason like I'm doing this, because we want to protect our position from exchanges being shut down. So we want to set up exchanges that can't be shut down. And this is essentially going to be a national Hawala type system to an extent. It doesn't work in the same way as Hawala does, but it'll allow the transfer of cash and value all over countries and across borders. People will be able to build entire systems on this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, individuals, in particular areas that have a lot of, contacts can use this as their system. I mean, you can have a guy at a university who buys and sells all the Bitcoin.
Yeah, who becomes the agent for that university.
And he uses this system as his back end. And not everyone in the university doesn't have to do this. He's just the point man. So, you know, this starts going, multiple
and then you
layers.
combine this with the Ubitext location based Bitcoin exchange, you know, trying to find the nearest exchange to you.
Yeah.
And it's pretty powerful stuff.
Oh yeah. This is wow. It's insane.
So that's
good work.
That's Nomecoin. That's one thing. The second project we're working on is Bitdrop. I mentioned that to you last time. We've started development on it. Development has been a bit slow, but we have come to the conclusion that it is totally doable. And not just totally doable, but I mean doable in such a that I mean it's going to be really good. we've actually found out there's two different types of people that would. So there's normal nodes, you know, deliver from one person to another, and then there's what we would call a router, a person who would frequently travel from one location to another over a long distance. So when they're doing that, we can route a large number of packages with them to the other location, and that will connect bunches of nodes between them.
Yeah. All right. That's something else. You know, I want to bring up something because when people have listened to the show and sent me some feedback, they have this problem and they've said that they don't see Bitdrop being able to work at all because of the trust factors and liability and all of those things. Can you give us a few ideas on some of the way that the system is being set up for the issues of trust? I mean, the trust is not just that the
guy trust is the most important issue.
Yeah, it's not just that the guys that one of these runners is going to get something and that he's just going to disappear. It can be also that there's not like a sting going on that, you know, somebody is sending something and it's just a tracer, you know, to stuff like that. Can you throw out just a few ideas? I mean, we don't have to get into it, but it would be interesting to throw that out there for the listeners.
So with regards to trust, there's going to be a kind of bootstrap issue when Bitdrop does start up. We will have to, because, you know, nobody will have any trust except, you know, maybe people who already have trust in the Bitcoin community. But in terms of as runners, everybody's going to be starting from zero. So there is that bootstrap issue. But every runner is going to develop a history. And the more successful a runner is, basically the more often a runner delivers a package on time and without damage or without being lost, that will improve the runner's trust ratio, I suppose you could say. Also, runners won't get paid. They won't get any Bitcoin so every time a package changes hands, we'll have a way to record and prove that package was delivered to the next runner. So any runner that loses a package won't get any Bitcoin. So unless, you know, they know what the package is and they think it's worth something to them, they won't get paid. And it'd be a serious mark on the record. So, you know, if they lose, you know, more than one or two packages, then they'd be kind of bald.
Yeah.
Yeah, make a black mark and then the system will route around them.
Okay. Right. I'm going to throw this out there for the listeners real quick. Is the Bitdrop system is a worldwide package delivery system that is networked?
Well, I wouldn't say worldwide. Certainly not yet. Anyway, it's definitely kind of regional. And area based. So if you're in one city, it should be not too difficult to get a package delivered around that city.
Okay.
And then as it grows, then it'll be able to go from city to city to city, and then possibly the world.
Right. But the one other way to look at when I say worldwide is that this is a system that can pop up in all locations around the world. I mean, people may start doing this in Somalia as soon as the system goes live. It's not just like a thing for the U.S., so
no, it's available to be used anywhere in the world.
Right. So you want something delivered, and you are going to pay out so much for the delivery, and the market, I guess, is going to decide what those prices are based upon what a person's needs are, how much they'll pay, and how much people are willing to do it. And it goes from point to point until it actually gets to a...
until it reaches its destination.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is that at no point, except for the person at the final destination, the person receiving it, at no point along the way does anybody know the final destination of the package, mm-hmm. except the bit drop system. So unless someone hacks the bit drop system, then, you know, so people will be able to deliver packages to other people without actually knowing where they are. Physically yeah. knowing where they are. They'll just know, the system will just say that, yes, this package can be delivered, and it'll be sent to that person, and then you'll get a confirmation saying that the person has received it, and that's it. You won't actually know where the person is. So you'll be like, I want to send a package to Paul. You don't know where Paul is, but the system tells you that a package can be delivered from you to Paul.
Wow.
So in this way, you're going to be able to send packages to people, and they're... I suppose you could say their destination, their location will remain totally anonymous. So
wow.
I suppose this would be useful in the sense that, you know, if you had questionable packages and you know, you want to be able to receive this package, then, you know, because one of the things about, say, selling drugs or illegal things in the post, you know, you have to give your address to the postman and to the person who's sending it to you. So, you know, if you were to buy something that was to be delivered, that was illegal, then they have your address and they could go and arrest you. But with BitDrop, this system will become very, very difficult, possible, but difficult to hack, to
right.
do this kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
And the thing you brought up there about sting operations, this is actually something we were talking about when we were coming up with the concept that, yes, what if say the FBI, you know, they want to find out the location of a particular user. So they pay to send a package to a particular user, and that package has a tracer in it, has a a GPS thing that will call home as soon as it gets to the destination, or it'll tell the route as it goes along.
Yeah.
So it knows exactly which way the package traveled and so on. And we figured out that the best way to do this is to seal the package in a kind of Faraday cage. So wrap the thing in tinfoil so that as long as it's traveling, as long as it's going from point to point to point, it can't transmit any information. And it's only when it's opened that the package could give away its destination.
Uh-huh.
And the simple way to get around that is to open the package in a public place. So you go, if you're in New York, you go to Times Square or somewhere like that, where, and then you open the package, and if it's a sting package, then, you know, well, you just leave it, and the only information they have is that it was opened in New York or in Times Square. Which
yeah,
is
you do what they do in the movies. You open it next to a taxi, and if it's a call home device,
tracer.
Yeah, you throw it in a taxi, and you tell the guy to go to the airport, right?
Downtown. Yeah,
right.
So you basically like the package. When it goes to the first delivery node, they're going to wrap it in tinfoil or a kind of tinfoil type package, and then it shouldn't be able to send any signals while it's being delivered. And then when you get the package, don't open it at home. And if you don't open it at home, you open it in a public place somewhere away from your home, you'd be fine.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's...
Of course.
What about
If it was like a phone that you had ordered and that was a sting operation, and of course you get the phone and it's been, you know, it's got a bug fixed in, well, you can't really do anything about that, but that's getting really, really paranoid.
Yeah. You know, there's, what about things with like geocaching? Is that going to play into this at all?
I think geocaching will be useful to an extent, because there will be times when nodes won't be able to kind of be at a certain place by a certain time for another node to pick up. So they'll have to find a location to drop it off to, and geocaching will be useful in that instance. And it'll also be useful as a kind of cutout to prevent at somewhere along the line of one package's kind of journey, we'll try and introduce at least one geocaching situation to try and have that situation as a cutout to make it more difficult to track where the package is going.
Yeah, yeah. I could see that also being used. Maybe if I was a receiver, I may give authorization for certain runners to leave stuff in certain places and then report back the GPS location to me.
There's also, if you have a questionable package and you don't want to be caught, you know, if you're worried about that the person, the first node to pick up the package might be a sting, you can always leave it in a geocache location, and then they can come and collect it from there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of questions and a lot of scenarios and stuff like that. But
yeah, we'll find all that out when we start running the thing.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, worst case is that it, let's just say that it turns into a system that works only among people that have very, very high trust links between the nodes that they're dealing with, and it's not something that anyone can just jump into. I mean, I'm just saying, worst case, it could just be something. Let's say that you had a global network of, like, TAS communities. You know,
This could be like a physical version of a friend-to-friend file sharing network.
Right. And that's at a worst case. If you start sitting and talking about, like, well, they can do this and they can do that. Okay, well, that's more of a system that's just open-ended. And there is probably a lot of room for some creative stuff that can still be done. But still, at a worst case, this still can be very powerful for interconnecting, especially if you're talking about problems in the future with social collapse. And things in many countries around the world, you may have many more little communities that are internetworked together with each other, and when these other systems collapse, there's going to be a need for goods and products and services and packages and communications and things like that to go between these networks. I mean, here's another just crazy example that could be used for this system. Is in the show we had with DA2C7. I can never say his name without it sitting in front of me. The one where he talked about Bitcoin over Freenet and in an offline situation. A network like this could just be transferring USB sticks from point to point, replicating the Freenet cache. It could be used just for that. For running a complete offline network with zero telecommunications lines. So.
And I think with the incentive of being able to get paid Bitcoin for doing that kind of thing is actually not just possible, but it would actually be probable because, you know, Bitcoin users would, if Bitcoin continues to grow at the rate it is, you know, Bitcoin users will not have a problem paying a bit extra to have the network continue running even in the event of a catastrophic Internet shutdown.
Right. Yes, exactly.
So it'll pay for itself, basically.
Yeah. Well, anything else you want to talk about on BitDrop before we get to this last one?
I'll be selling shares for BitDrop in a couple of weeks' time, next week or two. and we've got two developers on it already, but we're going to be hiring more people because I want to get progress going forward on this quicker. I don't have the time myself to oversee everything in it, so I'm looking for a good person to run the development, and I'll give you the resources. Whoever it is who I can get for this, I'll give them the resources to get it done, and we'll get it rolling.
Fantastic. Wow. Okay, next project.
Next project is called Crypto Cloud.
What is this?
And this is something I haven't announced yet. I've just kind of mentioned it to a few people. And the idea with CryptoCloud is one of the things we noticed, you know, with the stock exchange and then with other projects that are happening, a lot of these services need to run from inside CipherSpace. They need to have either a .onion address run from inside Tor or an EIP site running from inside I2P, somewhere where they can anonymously run the website without being, so they can't be shut down or tracked or traced or anything like that. And we need to do this with Bitcoin Global for the stock exchange. We need to do this for our Nomacoin project for the exchange, because eventually the the state is going to try and crack down on us, and they'll use everything that they can, so we want to try and make it as difficult as possible. So we figured that we have this need to be able to run from inside cyberspace. Several other people also have this need. What if we were to offer a service just like Amazon... Okay. Just like Amazon... AWS, Amazon's web service, but running from inside I2P or inside Tor. So it's essentially a cloud service hidden inside the darknet.
Right. Okay.
And the idea with this is that if you want to set up a service or a website or anything that you feel the location, you know, it needs to remain anonymous, or you're serving a content that's banned or illegal for whatever reason, copyright reasons, for example, we will have this platform for you to use. You can pay for it with Bitcoin, and you won't need to... It'll seriously help out in terms of administration. So it'll have the convenience of Amazon's web service with the protection and privacy provided by I2P and other darknet services.
Okay.
Wow. So we're going to be, that's the initial plan. Well, we need these services to, you know, I can see the what the state is doing, slowly preparing to do, coming down the road. So we need, and you know, my wealth, I don't have a lot of money, but my wealth is tied up in Bitcoin, and I want to protect that. And a lot of other people's wealth is also tied up in Bitcoin, and we need to protect that. And this is the way we can protect it, by ensuring that all our Bitcoin services remain online, even if the state tries to shut them down.
Right.
And this is one of the pieces of the puzzle to allow that. The other is having exchanges that can't be shut down, and then the other is having a delivery service that can't be shut down.
Yeah, wow. This is quite an infrastructure. And, you know, you talked about the issues with the state. That has not arisen until this week. This was the first week that this stuff has popped up on the radar with that Schumer guy in Washington, D.C. I don't know who threw this on his desk, but I guess it was on Gawker.
So there was a Gawker article about a website called Silk Road, which is it's a website that runs from inside Tor, so it's inside the darknet. They don't know where this website is, and they can't seize the domain. And they can't shut it down. Well, not easily anyway.
Right.
And this website, Silk Road, essentially it's like the best description is eBay for drugs or eBay for illegal goods, where buyers and sellers can get on there and can put up anything they want to sell, legal, illegal, doesn't matter, you know. And a lot of different kinds of illegal substances like cocaine, marijuana, amphetamines, and various other illegal drugs have been sold online.
Uh-huh.
And this was covered, you know, this has been going on since February. Fairly well known by most of the people in the Bitcoin community. I don't know who uses it. It's not something I could use because I'm based in China.
Yeah.
I don't fancy getting shot for trying to smoke a bit of weed. I wouldn't smoke weed anyway. It's not my kind of thing. But I don't want. It's not a risk I would take here.
Yeah.
So the Gawker article covered it, and then that news kind of exploded. So Gawker covered it, and then 10, 20, 30 other newspapers reported eBay type websites selling drugs on the internet. Protect your kids, and using anonymous, untraceable currency, Bitcoin. And this landed then on the desk of Chuck Schumer and another representative, senator, yeah. And they were like, oh my God, someone's selling drugs on the internet? Stop everything! So they got down in front of the TV and they're like, we will shut this down, this is illegal, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
In the meantime, since this broke out, as far as I know, Silk Road have turned the website off on the Tor website. You know, they have their own domain, silkroad.com, and it's just like we're not accepting any new users at the moment, blah blah blah. But the Tor domain, they have shut down as a precaution, I think, and possibly to add some kind of defense against any kind of state action.
Yeah.
But the state has sat up and, well, not all of the state, but some people.
Right.
Some real statists, basically. Schumer is a statist, and the other guy is also a statist, big time. These are the kind of people who want the state to be able to regulate every little detail of your life. They've said they're going to seize the domain. Good luck with them doing this. But they've made Silk Road a target, and they've also said that Bitcoin is used for money laundering and therefore needs to be shut down.
Yeah.
So it's in bad light. It has come to state attention. It's already been in the attention of the state in the U.S. for some time because one of the main developers of Bitcoin, Gavin Anderson, got an invitation from the CIA to go and speak in Langley and give them basically explain to them what is going on, explain to them with what Bitcoin is and how it can be used and so on and so forth. So the state, at least the intelligence agencies of the state, are aware of Bitcoin and are interested in it.
Yeah, well, their awareness of it, I think, is a little bit different right now than it was when they originally issued the invitation, not because of this stuff with Schumer and Gawker, but because of what has happened just in the past few weeks with Bitcoin and the Bitcoin community. Within the past month, it has exploded on a daily basis. The number of people getting involved, the ideas behind it, spreading
the new services and products.
Yeah.
And then the price of Bitcoin itself.
Yeah, but did it? It's up to like close to 30. Did it actually hit the 30 mark? Did it hit?
It hit 32. It hit 32, and it's 32? Hovering over 30.
Great. Yeah, and this is just the beginning. I think everyone that has been following this is seeing that the only reason that it is not growing any faster than it is now is only because of awareness. It's not because everyone knows about it and some people are into it and some aren't. It's more about...
It's just a lot of people don't know about it.
No, as fast as they're finding out. Oh, you know that Gawker article and the whole thing. Within 24 hours that if you did a search on the title of the original article, it had hit on Google search results over 400 and something thousand hits within like 24 hours.
So it's kind of publicity you cannot pay for.
Yeah, right. Well, that, you know,
it's not bad publicity because the kind of people who would use Bitcoin are likely to be below 40. People who are, you know, who either use the internet a lot or who have always used the internet. And these people are not the kind of person who think, drugs, cocaine, marijuana, evil. You know, I don't do drugs myself. I don't even drink or smoke. But there is, I know plenty of people who do. And I don't know anyone who doesn't know someone who does. And nobody thinks anything bad of it. So the kind of, you know, and a lot of people are like this. So I don't think that, this publicity, you know, the think of the children and stuff, it's not doing a bad thing because I think the majority of people who would use Bitcoin are not afraid of drugs at all or anything. That kind of thing doesn't bother them.
Right. One of the first things that happens with a lot of people is they say they're doing what with it? In other words, you mean they're doing it and they're doing that with it and it's not being stopped, which shows some particular properties about it. And then they see the price has done what? You know, so all of these things are piking people's interest into seeing, okay, let's see. Basically, it's a digital currency. In other words, it's something that's in your computer. And you can sit here and try to explain all this stuff about it. And one of the easiest ways to do it is with someone when they say, can you do this with it? Can you do that with it? You know, I always say to them, it's just like cash. It's cash. It's no different than cash. Okay. It's cash. So if whatever, you know, can you buy this with it? Can you send it here and do that with it? Can you do, I'm like, whatever you can do with cash, that's what you do in there. And because they like to like get a little freaked out about how dangerous this system is. And it's no different than, I mean, everything that's being done with it is being done with cash, except take it to another level and just say, well, when you transfer it, you don't have to just transfer the cash physically. You can do it electronically. And wow.
It's been great. It's been great talking to you. I have to get going now.
Okay.
I'm about to get cut off. So.
Okay. Super.
I'll.
Thank you very much.
It's been good talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. We'll have the show up soon. We'll talk to you soon too.
Okay. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye. All right, everyone. We hit about 1 hour there, and that was an absolutely fantastic show. Check out the show notes for links to all of the. Projects he talked about that are live right now on the GLBSE and the several projects that are going up for investment into this infrastructure. And we'll see you all soon.
Dodge this.
This is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. AgoristRadio.com is sponsored by MetroPipe.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
Broadcasting from deep within the Second Realm, you are listening to AgoristRadio.com.